Virtual session moderator, Jeffrey Norcross, who's joining us again from EPA Region 1, Office of Site Remediation and Restoration.
Hey everyone, this is Jeff Norcross. I'm a member of EPA Region 1's RCRA Lead Region team. Thanks for participating in today's webinar. This webinar series is an effort to capture and share RCRA institutional knowledge and expertise within EPA and with our state and tribal partners. In this series, RCRA and us experts will talk about how they know what they know, including keys to success, go-to resources, stories, and examples of how they get their jobs done. As Gene stated, there will be time for questions at the end of the session, so please feel free to type those in as we go along. It's now my pleasure to introduce today's expert, Karen Sullivan. Karen is an economist in the Office of Land and Emergency Management, or OLEMS, Office of Communications, Partnerships, and Analysis. Karen has a PhD from the University of Rhode Island and uses her expertise in environmental economics to conduct program and policy impact analyses for OLEM. Karen's contributions to OLEM were recognized in fiscal year 16 when she was selected as OLEM's Analyst of the Year. The work that Karen will present to you today was a collaborative effort with Ashut Kaffel, who is with Karen and who is also an economist and an ORISE postdoctoral research fellow in the same offices. Last year, this project was highlighted as one of two EPA projects that the White House Evidence Deputies process which is an effort to strengthen evidence work across the federal government. So with that, I'll turn things over to Karen.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Gene, for setting all of this up today, and Jeff for that introduction. And thank you for the invitation, for the opportunity to present at the RCRA webinar Brown Bag. I'm very excited today to present to you an update on our project that uses data on inspections and compliance at underground storage tanks to evaluate the effect of requiring more frequent inspections on compliance. And I also want to mention I have Ashut Kaffel here in the room with me today, so when we get to the question round, he may be offering some answers as well. So, as many of you on the call today know, in the U.S., there are over 500,000 underground storage tanks that store petroleum or hazardous substances. And the greatest potential hazard from a leaking underground storage tank is that petroleum or other hazardous substances can seep into the soil, contaminate groundwater, which is the source of drinking water for nearly half of all Americans. A release may also cause other health and environmental risks, such as fire or explosion. And EPA has been working for decades with states, tribes, and industry to help protect the environment and human health from potential underground storage tank releases. But prior to the Energy Policy Act of 2005, there was no federal requirement determining how often states must inspect facilities for compliance with US release prevention and detection requirements. And so, as you can see from this map, there was significant variation in how frequently and regularly tanks were inspected across the United States. This map is taken from a report from the U.S. General Accountability Office, and it estimates inspection frequency and regularity based on responses to a survey of tank program managers from across the United States. This survey was done in 2002, and so you can see that at that time, more than half of all states did not inspect on a regular basis or inspected at a frequency of 4 years or longer. Specifically, 42% of states reported that they did not inspect all of their underground storage tanks on a regular basis. Those are the states shaded in the dark gray. And 20% of states reported that they inspected their tanks regularly, but at a frequency of 4 years or longer. And those are the states shaded in the lighter gray color. Then, in 2005, Congress passed the Energy Policy Act of 2005, or EPACT for short, and with it came the requirement that all regulated underground storage tank facilities must be inspected to evaluate compliance with US requirements for release prevention and detection at least once every 3 years. Now, this graph here shows national underground storage tank compliance rates just prior to the law in fiscal year 2005 to fiscal year 2014, as reported to EPA. Now, the law allowed for a transition period of 2 years, during which all states were required to conduct compliance inspections of those tanks that hadn't been inspected since 1998. And that time period is shaded in blue on the graph, and you can see a slight decrease in the national compliance rates during that time. However, as states moved towards inspecting all of their tanks at least once every 3 years, national compliance rates have improved. This trend, it represents a significant improvement in compliance, but since it's just a trend line, we can't tell what's driving those improvements. Is it increased inspection frequency, or are there other factors that could be contributing to these improvements as well? And so this question is what led us to our analysis objective, which is to determine the impact of increasing inspection frequency to at least once every 3 years on underground storage tank compliance. Now, when we started out with this project, as in any data analysis project, one of our first steps was to identify the statistical methods and the data that we would need to conduct a rigorous evaluation that would allow us to arrive at robust and defensible conclusions. And so now, I'm an economist, and in the field of economics, understanding how firms respond to monitoring enforcement has been an area of study for several decades. And so my first stop in figuring out the statistical methods and the data that I'd need was to turn to the existing theories of compliance in the economics literature, and also to look at previously published peer-reviewed statistical analyses on inspection and compliance. And looking at that literature, we find that traditional economic theory of compliance, it assumes the tank owner will make decisions about compliance based on a comparison of the costs and the benefits. And the statistical analyses of inspection and compliance build off of this idea that the likelihood of compliance will depend on the factors that impact compliance costs and expected non-compliance costs. And when we started out on this project, we thought that we might be able to do a national level analysis using the state level performance data reported biannually to EPA. However, we quickly learned that the performance data was not sufficient for this analysis, mainly due to two reasons. The lack of a consistent measure of compliance over the study period, and also a lack of data on inspection frequency or the number of inspections in each state over the time period. So early on, we knew that what we were going to need is facility-level data on inspection compliance, enforcement, and releases. And we needed data from several years before and after EPACT, and we needed that data to come from locations that experienced a change in inspection frequency as a result of the Energy Policy Act's 3-year requirement. And so once we knew that we would need facility-level data to conduct the analysis, we knew that we'd have to reach out to the state underground storage tank programs to help us with this analysis, because facility-level data is maintained in the states. And so we reached out to states, and many were interested in sharing their data and partnering with us to conduct the analysis, which was fantastic. And you know, I think that the state, us program managers, were seeing that increasing inspection frequency in the field was having improvements in facilities compliance, but perhaps that they lacked the hard evidence of the effectiveness that they could show with data. And so they were interested in working with us to see if we could show that in the data. So we talked with many states during the initial phases of this project, but unfortunately, we quickly learned that many states didn't have enough data from the years before EPACT for us to be able to conduct the analysis. But luckily, early on, we partnered with Louisiana's underground storage tank program, which did have enough data from before the Energy Policy Act was implemented, as well as an increase in inspection frequency. In Louisiana, prior to EPACT, the state requirement had been to inspect 15% of tanks each year, which is roughly equivalent to inspections every 6 years. So today I'm going to present to you the results from analyzing Louisiana's data, but we are planning to add several more states to this analysis this year, including Arkansas, New York, Tennessee, and Delaware. So we set out on this project with Louisiana, and they shared their data on tank characteristics, inspections, compliance, enforcement, and confirmed releases. And once we got the data from them, we had to spend quite a bit of time combining the data sets into one standardized format for analysis and checking for any errors or inconsistencies in the data. We also identified from the addresses of the US facilities the geographic coordinates for each one so that we could include characteristics in our analysis of the communities and the environment surrounding those facilities, because those factors may also impact a facility's compliance behavior. And so we got the socioeconomic data from the US Census and the environmental data from the US Soil Survey. And when we had our final data set together, it included over 10,000 inspections that occurred between fiscal year 2001 and 2012 at about 4,600 facilities. So here, this graph shows Louisiana's inspection and compliance from fiscal year 2001 to 2012. Now, I'm going to go through each of the lines depicted on this graph with you carefully, but first I'll define what they are. So, focusing on the blue line, it represents the percent of facilities inspected each year, and the red line is a subset of the blue and depicts the percent of inspected facilities that were issued at least one non-compliant citation at their inspection. So again, the blue line is the percent of facilities inspected each year, and the red line is the percent of those inspected facilities that were issued at least one non-compliance citation at their inspection. So let's start by focusing in on the blue line, which shows us, again, the percent of facilities inspected each year. And you can see that prior to EPACT, Louisiana was only inspecting between 7 and 15% of their facilities each year. After EPACT, you can see that there's a dip in inspections that were done in fiscal year 2006. And this was the result of having to divert limited resources to deal with the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. But in the years to follow, you can see that Louisiana increased the percent of facilities inspected each year until they settled into the three-year inspection cycle when about 30 to 40% of facilities are inspected in any given year. Now, turning your attention to the red line, which indicates the percent of inspected facilities that were issued at least one non-compliant citation at their inspection, you can see that during the initial two-year transition inspection period, that the percent of facilities issued non-compliant citations increases. This could be due to the fact that these facilities were the ones that hadn't been inspected in quite a few years. And as you move into the reoccurring three-year inspection cycle, you see the non-compliant citations dropping off. This suggests that inspections were having a positive impact on compliance in Louisiana. However, remember again here that at this point, we're still just looking at the trends, and we need further analysis to establish a more robust relationship between increased inspection frequency and the improvements in compliance that we can attribute to that increase in inspection frequency. So we use a statistical model that allows us to directly examine the relationship between inspection frequency and compliance while accounting for other factors that may impact a facility's compliance behavior. More specifically, we use a probit model, which is a model in statistics that is commonly used when the outcome variable is binary, like the one we have here, where we're defining the facility as either non-compliant or compliant. So we define that outcome variable that we're interested in as non-compliance is equal to 1 when a facility received at least 1 non-compliant citation at the inspection. And the model, what it does is allows us to estimate the probability or the likelihood that a facility, when inspected, is issued at least 1 non-compliant citation as a function of inspection frequency and other factors that may impact a facility's compliance decisions. And so our main variable of interest representing inspection frequency in the model is the years since the last inspection at the facility. So again, we measure inspection frequency in our analysis as the time since the last compliance inspection at the facility. And the purpose for including all the other factors in the green box that you see there on the right is so that we can separate out the effect that inspection frequency has from the effect that other factors have on compliance. And you can see all of the other factors that we included in the model in the green box. And generally, what we include and control for are characteristics of the facility and the area surrounding the facility, variables concerning the inspection and compliance history, as well as the release history at the facility, and variables to represent the presence of regulators, such as the distance to the nearest regional field office, as well as what region the facility is located in. We also include a variable to account for the time period when operator trainings began occurring in Louisiana. So there is a careful statistical consideration that we had to make when we did this analysis. Because the data, in economics we call it being censored, but really what this means is that, you know, we can only observe compliance at a facility when it's inspected. And so because of that, because of the censored nature of our data, there is this statistical concern that we could have a selection bias in our analysis. That is, if there was any targeting of inspection based on unobserved characteristics of the facility that would make them both more likely to be inspected and more likely to violate, which could be the case in pre-EPAC years, then the results of our analysis would be biased. And so to correct for this, in statistics, we can use a model that includes both equations, two equations, one that looks at the probability of a facility being inspected. We call that our selection equation. How is that facility selected for inspection? And another that estimates the probability of the facility being in noncompliance given that they are inspected. And that's our main equation that we're interested in. And For the statistically inclined here, you can see the bivariate probit model with sample selection and the maximum likelihood function that we use. But don't worry, we aren't going to go through this equation in any detail this afternoon. We'll just move on to the results, focusing on the equation that estimates the probability or the likelihood of noncompliance at an underground storage tank facility, given that it's inspected. And so overall, our analysis suggests that increasing inspection frequency to 3 years, as required by the Energy Policy Act of 2005, has improved compliance in Louisiana. We came to this conclusion because the variable years since last inspection had a positive and statistically significant effect on compliance behavior in Louisiana. This means that while holding all of the other factors included in the model fixed, when inspection frequency increased, the likelihood of compliance also increased. And so additionally, so let me just say that again, that we did find that when we hold all other factors constant in the model, when inspection frequency increased, the likelihood of compliance also increased, which is our main finding. But additionally, we are able to use our model to look at the effect that increasing inspection frequency had on a typical facility. For illustrative purposes, we can give an example here. So a typical facility is one that has the average variables, the average values for the continuous explanatory variables in the model. And continuous variables, I mean ones like average number of tanks or average capacity. And the median value for all the discrete explanatory variables. And those are the ones like whether or not that facility had a confirmed release since the last inspection. So our typical facility is one that is the average facility in Louisiana. And so when we use our model to estimate the probability of the facility being in compliance when it's been 6 years since their last inspection versus when it's been 3 years since their last inspection, we see that when we do this, we find that an increase in inspection frequency from 6 years, which was approximately the state-regulated inspection cycle prior to EPACT, to 3 years, that there's an increase in the likelihood of compliance by 11%. And we presented this result at an economics conference, and one of the questions we got was whether or not the effect that increasing inspection frequency had on compliance differed depending on if facilities had been compliant at their last inspection or not. So since then, we added a variable to our model that allows us to answer this question. So does the effect of increasing inspection frequency differ depending on whether the facility was compliant or non-compliant at the last inspection? And so here you can see our result. On the left, you can see a representative facility that was compliant at the last inspection. And you can see that there is a 13 percentage point increase in the likelihood of compliance at the current inspection if it has been 3 years instead of 6 years since the last inspection at the facility. And on the right, you can see a representative facility that was non-compliant at the last inspection. And you can see that there's a 9 percentage point increase in the likelihood of compliance at the current inspection if it's been 3 years instead of 6 years since the last inspection of the facility. So we find that for both types of facilities, those that were compliant last and those that were non-compliant last, that inspecting them sooner increases the probability of compliance, but more so for those that were compliant last. And in addition to inspection frequency and compliance status at the last inspection impacting the likelihood of compliance, we find that there are other factors that impact the likelihood of compliance at a facility. And I'm just going to highlight a few of them for you here now in the essence of time. But now remember that when we interpret these results, we're looking at the impact of each individual factor while holding all of the other factors constant. So for example, we find that facilities with a larger average tank capacity were more likely to comply. This means that if you had two facilities with similar characteristics, but one had a larger average tank capacity than the other, the one that had the larger capacity would be more likely to comply than the one with the lower capacity. We also find that facilities with newer tanks were more likely to comply, holding all other factors constant. And also, if a facility had more inspections in the past, or if they were compliant at their last inspection, they were more likely to be compliant at the current inspection. And interestingly, we find that operator training appears to be improving compliance. We didn't have very good data on which facilities had operators trained, but we were able to include a variable that indicated that the inspection was occurring in the time period after the date when Louisiana began holding operator trainings. And we found that during that time period, facilities were more likely to be compliant, holding everything else constant. So we also did some robustness checks of our findings. And to do this, we explored a number of alternative models. And I'm just going to give you an example of one that we did. We looked at using the number of citations as an outcome variable instead of the binary outcome measure of compliance that we had used of compliant or not. And generally, the results of that alternative model and the other ones listed here, our results were qualitatively robust to these different alternative specifications, giving us further confidence in our results that they held up when we used these alternative models. So, to date, we've analyzed data from Louisiana using a statistical model that's commonly used in empirical studies of monitoring enforcement to examine the impact of time since the last inspection on the probability of compliance. And our results do show that increasing inspection frequency to at least once every 3 years has improved underground storage tank compliance in Louisiana. For example, for that representative facility in Louisiana, an increase in inspection frequency from 6 years to 3 years increased the likelihood of compliance by 11 percentage points. And so last month, we submitted a manuscript on this analysis of Louisiana for peer review at an economics journal. And we're currently waiting for some comments back from the reviewers. And since then, we've moved on to trying to include additional states in the analysis. And we hope to be able to include those in the next year and hopefully present them to you at that time. And so lastly, before we move on to questions, I'd like to acknowledge and thank those people who have made this analysis possible and that have given us feedback along the way to make it stronger. So as you can see from this acknowledgments page, there are many people who we'd like to thank, but I'd particularly like to acknowledge Sam Burchard in Louisiana for sharing Louisiana's inspection and compliance data and his knowledge about the underground storage tank program in Louisiana and for answering all of our questions along the way. We really couldn't have done it without his support. So thank you if you're on the line, Sam. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Jeff to start the questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Karen. That was very interesting. And we got some great questions. And I'll try to read them in a way that we're kind of like following one related thing after another, but that I may fall off track, but I'll do my best. So the first question is, in which year did Louisiana adopt the EPA Act requirements into their state law?
I believe, I don't know if Sam's on the line. He might have a better answer for that one.
Sam, you can type it in if you are online.
Yep, Sam is connected, so I'll monitor to see if he gives us a response.
I'll move on to the next question. And was change in ownership or operator considered as one of the factors, I guess, for one of the factors that you eliminated so that the results would be as accurate as possible?
Right. That's a great question. We would have loved to have been able to do that. But unfortunately, the way that we have, the way that the data is it shows the current owner and we don't have the historical owner. And so there was no way to be able to parse out whether or not the facilities had changed hands over time. So no, we aren't able to control for that.
Okay. The next question is, how many active UST facilities were there in Louisiana for inspection? What was the universe?
The universe is fairly close to our sample size. I don't have those numbers right in front of me exactly, but it was pretty close.
Okay. Here's another question. You accounted for whether or not the inspector was a state or private inspector. Why did you choose not to factor in the inspector's experience level?
Yes. So we did consider including that because experience level will have an impact on the results of inspections. I agree, but again, it was a data challenge, enable how best to quantify the inspector's experience because, we had how many inspections the inspector had done underground storage tank facilities in Louisiana, but we didn't know if they were doing other types of inspections as well and how that would translate over to their overall experience level. And so we didn't feel confident that we could develop a variable that captured inspector experience properly.
Okay, thanks. Here's another question. Doing more inspections takes more resources. Can all states afford to increase the number of inspections that they are performing? How is Louisiana able to afford to do additional inspections?
Is Tim on the line still?
Yes, I am.
I don't know if you can comment on that. I don't have much experience with the budget.
Right. Budget, the EPEC requirement put in place that as a function of receiving or continuing to receive Subtitle I funding. However, there wasn't any additional money provided to states. It was a requirement for continuing to receive funding. That shift that you saw or that was explained by Karen, that was going from 15% inspections, which was about 15% of their total population of about 10,000 tanks or so, to getting those done 30 to 40%, as Karen mentioned, So that ramp up, I'm not quite sure how the state accomplished that, but they did, fortunately, and they continue to do it just like other states. There is no additional funding. There are probably creative ways to shift some funding, but that's been a source of discussion for the past 6-7 years now. Bottom line is there is no additional funding to meet the inspection requirement. It is a 3-year required by Congress, so we meet that requirement as we can.
Hey, this is Sam Broussard. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, let me answer that question. Tim was real eloquent when he said that we did not get any additional funding to meet all these federally mandated requirements. In Louisiana, we do have a motor fuels trust fund that pays for underground storage tank cleanups, and additional money in that fund allows us to use for administrative costs for our program. So we do have to pull money out of our cleanup trust fund to fund the additional inspections that we do.
Thank you, Sam. Here's another question. What constitutes a non-compliant citation? If a facility does not have records on site but sends it in afterward, will they receive a citation?
So the definition of the non-compliance site, that a facility had a non-compliant citation, was if they had any citations given at the time of the inspection, which I believe included that. Sam, you might be able to speak more generally to that specific point about records being at the facility.
Well, we would look at 3 years of records, and if they were out of compliance with previous things, that got documented. And if they were in compliance at the out of compliance, but they corrected it, that would get documented. So we would include any type of non-compliance within the last 3 years prior to that inspection that their records would show, regardless if it was corrected at the time. The only difference, it wouldn't carry any kind of penalties or anything like that.
Thanks. Here's another question. This is a follow-up question on the analysis for facilities that are more likely to be in compliance. The question is, was a review of facility type considered? For example, retail gas stations versus local government highway garages?
No, we weren't. That wasn't listed in the data, so we weren't able to control for that.
Okay, here is a question that exceeds my understanding of statistics and economics. Is the relationship between inspection frequency and probability of compliance a linear function? Is there an upper bound on the frequency before diminishing returns override the benefit? And if so, what is the frequency value?
I'm not sure. What that question is asking. I think to paraphrase, I think it might be asking if we can tell is there a point where when we have increased inspection frequency so much that the benefits from doing it any sooner would be less than the cost of doing so. I believe that's what they're asking. And I think, within our model, we're only able to predict within, comfortably predict within where the range of our data is. So you know, we can look at between 6 and 3 years, but it can give you a number, predict between three and, you know, what happens when you go between 3 and 1 year, 1 year between, but I wouldn't have a lot of confidence in that because our data isn't showing that part. So, you know, we would need to look at a state that had gone from, say, 6 years to 1 year, and then we could more comfortably look at how much the each individual increment there had an impact on the improved compliance. So that's why when I did the typical facility example, I went from, I gave the example of a facility that had been inspected 6 years versus 3 years, because those were numbers that I feel were representative of Louisiana's data. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Here's a question. Could the decrease in citations simply come from the increase in the number of inspections? If there were more inspections, I would think that that would keep facilities on their toes to avoid citations.
Well, I think that is what our analysis is trying to get at, right? So we're looking, when there are more frequent inspections, what impact does that have on compliance? And yeah, we think that it's going to keep them on their toes, and in fact, the data does show that we can attribute some of the improvement in compliance to the increased inspection frequency. And also, we do see that the facilities that had higher numbers of inspection over time, they also were more likely to comply. So yes, I think our analysis does, that's what our analysis looks at.
Thanks. I'm going to go back to an earlier question, and since Sam's on the line. Someone asked earlier, in which year did Louisiana adopt the EPA Act requirements into their state law?
Yeah, well, there were multiple facets of the Energy Act. Secondary containment was one. 3-year inspection cycle was another. Delivery prohibition was another. We started the 3-year cycle. Actually began in 2000, and we had to have every site inspected by August of 2008. So that's when we started it. We began the 3-year CEI cycle.
Thank you. Here's another question. Please address the potential applicability or inapplicability of your findings to other inspection types, for example, a hazardous waste or stormwater inspection. Has a similar analysis of other media?
So I think our study adds to the current literature that's out there that shows that inspections improve compliance. There are previous studies that have been done in areas with hazardous waste and with oil spills that have found that inspections do have a positive impact on compliance. And the one thing that our study does that's a little that beyond that study is most of them don't look at inspection frequency. They just look at whether or not a facility was inspected at any point in time. And so I think we build on previous studies in the area of hazardous waste and showing that inspection frequency does matter. And, you know, we do want to include additional states because, you know, Louisiana might be different than Arkansas or and so we want to see how the increase in inspection frequency impacts occur in an additional state. And I think as we get more results from other states, we'll have a better picture of the impacts.
Thanks. Another question. Do you think, quote unquote, education during the 3-year inspection is the key to increased compliance? owners have mentioned after inspections, they learned more than any fact sheet or operator training.
I think that inspections in and of themselves are an opportunity for the facility owners to learn about the requirements. But Sam, I would think that sort of the actual structure of the inspections hasn't changed significantly, and that and so that it's having the same effect throughout our study period. I don't know if you could talk a little bit about the education that occurs at your inspections.
Yeah, and as on a general principle, yeah, I can see where that would have an effect. But in reality, first of all, our inspection protocols haven't changed over the course of the last 15 years. They've basically been the same. We look at the same things. We try and help people get in compliance the same way we've always done. But it's hard to put a number on whether or not that's working or not, because in the underground storage tank universe, owners change nonstop. So you will rarely go to a site that's owned by the same company 3 years down the road. They're always changing ownerships, changing operators. So, yeah, if it's a consistent owner over time, you will see some increased compliance and from them learning. But generally, with the ownership changes and stuff, it doesn't have that much of an effect. It does have some, though, if there's some consistency in ownership. One other thing of, like, operator training, I have to say that, just think back the first time you learned how to do an inspection, did you know everything about your program? And you really don't. So it takes some years of repetition before owners start to get the gist of what all the requirements are.
And Sam, while I have you here, there was a question earlier about the number of active underground storage tanks in Louisiana. How many do you currently have?
We have about 4,500 facilities and tanks, or somewhere around a little under 11,000 active tanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that number is very close to what our final sample is. And actually, our final sample is just a little bit over that, and that's probably because we have some facilities that were closed or removed before the end of the study period that aren't active today. So our sample is very representative of the full universe in Louisiana. The only reason they may have been removed from the analysis is if they were missing some data points, if there was something wrong with the data.
Thanks. Here's another question. Do any of the data reflect activity in Indian country?
That would be no. EPA has jurisdiction over the Indian country UST sites.
Thanks. Another question. Did you account for the type of owner-operator, for example, large corporations with dedicated compliance staff versus mom-and-pop stores?
We didn't control for that explicitly because we didn't have an indicator of that in the data, but we did include the number of tanks and the capacity of the mean tank capacity at a facility. So as you got to, what we did find is that those that had a larger capacity tank, there was an increased probability of compliance at those facilities when there was a higher tank capacity. So I think in a way we did try to capture some of those characteristics that would tell us the difference between those, but we weren't able to control for the type specifically.
Thanks. Another question. Did Louisiana observe a decrease in new releases?
You know, actually, when we started the three-year cycle, we found an increase in new releases, and probably because we had inspected sites that have never been inspected before. So it did, the confirmed release numbers did go up when we started increasing inspections, but now they are going down, but there's other things to attribute that to, and it could be our secondary containment requirements took effect at the end of 2008. So we're hoping, we haven't done any statistics yet to see if that's the cause of the lower number of releases. Operator training has obviously helped also. People are finding their releases quicker. So they are going down, but we haven't pinpointed exactly what to attribute that to yet.
Thank you. Another question. We have about 5 more questions in the queue. Have you or do you plan to gather data regarding the effectiveness of compliance assistance programs?
I don't have any plans at the time to study that, but potentially it could be something that could be queued up in the future.
Thanks. Another question. In any of your analyses, did you separate the types of violations? For instance, financial responsibility shortcomings are quite a bit different from having a disconnected sensor.
So we did do some, we did try to do some analysis where we looked at the separate categories of the citations, but we ran into an issue in that when we divided up into so many categories, the statistical significance of the results are limited because we have less observations. But one thing that we did know is when we plot the different categories of the different regulation categories on a map, it looks a lot like, it follows a very similar pattern to what we saw when we do, when we look at just whether or not the facility was compliant or not. I mean, there is some variation between the different regulation categories on that graph, but overall they follow a similar pattern. I mean, for example, the one difference that does occur under the registration standards and fee schedule category, when the secondary containment did come into effect, we see a small spike in citations coming from that, but then that drops off and follows the pattern of the other types of categories that are having a downward trend.
Thanks. The question, why did you use soil permeability and median income among your factors?
So median income is, we include that as a way to address the idea that, you know, in a wealthy neighborhood perhaps, there may be more, people might say that there'd be more oversight of that gas of that facility. And also there could be more demand for the fuel product from that facility. And so we want to capture those sort of things that may affect the owner's ability to comply, the pressures that they might face from the local community, and also the demand, the fuel that is going through their facility. And the other question was
soil permeability.
Yes, the soil permeability. So we include soil permeability and the depth of the water table to try to account for how fast if there was a confirmed release, how quickly that could get to nearby groundwater sources. And this is to account for the potential of larger risks or larger releases that may occur if the facility doesn't comply with these prevention and detection requirements.
Thanks. Another question. Why do you think a larger tank capacity would be a factor in a facility being more likely to comply?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
Why do you think a large tank capacity is likely a factor that a facility would more likely to be in compliance? If that's what you concluded.
Yes, yes. So the results did show... I'm sorry, we're having a little bit of a room disturbance here. Do we have to go?
Yeah.
okay, so we think the mean tank capacity, so we do find that the larger tank capacity, the larger the probability that they're going to be in compliance. And I think that that might be because if they have larger tanks, that they could be owners that are more familiar with the facility, and also the technology on the larger tank might be better able to do measurements. And I think with that, that has to be the last question. I apologize.
That's okay. We understand. Thank you very much. Dean, do you want to do the closing?
Absolutely. So with that, let me walk everyone through just a few final reminders before we close things out here today. I want to thank Karen and Tim and Achut, as well as
Sam
and a number of other people who helped address questions today. We did have over 360 individuals join us from all over the country. I also want to thank those individuals for spending time with us today, as well as Jeff for moderating today's session. If you'd like to continue on, the RCRA Experts Brown Bag Series will carry on with our next webinar on March 8th at 1 p.m. Eastern. That session will look at the big picture, the RCRA functional equivalency policy, and the policy on more stringent versus broader in scope. We'll be joined by Jeffrey Fowley, Region 1 Office of Regional Council. He's a former employee from EPA Region 1, but he'll be coming back on to join us for that talk. So again, I encourage you, if you're interested, to register for that next webinar in the series at the URL shown on the screen. As we noted today, copies of the presentation materials can be found on the resources link that's available from the seminar homepage. If you'd like to reach out to the organizers for today's session, you'll find their information on the seminar homepage as well under the speakers tab. And I will ask if each one of you could take a short moment and fill out the online feedback form to let us know what you thought about today's delivery. I shared that link in the Q&A box. It's also under the related URL, so you can simply click on the link and let us know what you thought. If you happen to share the line with multiple people, each person can fill out that form to submit their own feedback in. And one of the nice features of that feedback form, if you would like to receive a participation certificate when you fill out that form, there's a box you can check to certify that you participated in the full seminar. And once you check that box and submit your feedback, you will automatically have access to an online feedback form that you can either download or print. So if you happen to be one of the lucky ones replaying today's webinar, you can still follow those links and share your feedback in that online form and print out one of those certificates. So again, thank you to the over